This is Loretta Northcutt Williams interviewing the Honorable Judge Sheldon Gardner for the Cook County Oral History Project. How are you doing this afternoon?
Great.
That's good. Last time we didn't talk a lot about your time on the WBEZ show Inside Politics, and I was wondering when you started that program.
Well, Bruce Dumont is a dear old friend of mine, and when he started the program, I was on from the beginning, people like Tom Moser, the whole group of people, Congressman Gutierrez, the whole group of people on there. And of course, when I became a judge, you really stay out of everything. In fact, I visited him once, and you can be very candid on things, but as a judge, you really don't have opinions.
I'm sorry, I've got a stack of orders I need to get signed. So
okay.
One moment, please. Okay. Proceed. You were saying you were with Congressman Gutierrez?
Gutierrez was on the program. Tom Moser, who writes a column. It's Bruce Dumont's show. And it was the largest show in terms of audience in the BEZ. Then he went, I believe, to WLS. And I think he's doing something also with Channel 20. And it was really good. I was in an unfortunate position because I'm somewhat of a centrist. And people on radio shows love you to be on an extreme. They love their hero to be with a knight in armor. They don't really like reasoned opinions. But it was a fun show.
And what years were you on this show?
Well, I became a judge 16 years ago. So I think it would be approximately 20 years ago for the next 5, 6, 8 years. So what would that be? This is about 80, 85 and through there.
Okay. And what sorts of things did you discuss in politics?
It was open to questions and stuff, and we really talked about current events and current politics. And I think, to be honest with you, I used to be, the position isn't there anymore, basically slightly right of center. But that position disappeared when John Anderson left. And it was fairly much the position of Lieberman and Clinton and the people who are moderates in the Democratic Party. Because there are no more moderates in the Republican Party, unfortunately.
And last time you told me that you have been involved with the Jewish Judges Association of Illinois.
Yes.
And what can you tell me about your involvement with the
organization? I guess we're about three to four years old. And Decalogue is a Jewish lawyer society. And most Jews belong to Decalogue. But the judges work together. We're a statewide society. Aaron Jaffe was the first president, and Jerry Bend was the president. And for maybe a year, year and a half, I've been program chairman, which is quite fun. And I bring all kinds of people to talk all kinds of things. For example, I'll give you this. The mayor of Skokie, Dan Scanlon, I'm sure is not a Jew, talks about his mayor, Morton Grove, the opening up of a concentration camp. And that's most interesting. I talked to other people like Governor Oglesby, who were with American troops opening concentration camps. And it's a tremendous experience to see the living skeletons walk out.
Wow.
And then we've got, for example, Uriah P. Levy by Gary Schiff. He's a very famous man. He was in the Navy, and he was responsible for the ending of Florida. His family also bought the Jefferson Estate and saved it and gave it. The tragedy is that the people who were in Jefferson Estate now never acknowledged that. But it was going, it would have gone to waste. And then Judge Gordon, he's expert on Jews in any sports. And we have a variety of things I spoke about in my book. Joel Spray Raymond spoke about somebody who's a fascinating man. So it's a good thing. We're mostly judges, but not all judges. And not all Jews, other people come. We spoke about capital punishment. I asked Gino DeVito to come in because he was a prosecutor and a criminal court. So it's a nice program. It's really enjoyable.
And you said it's open to everyone?
Yeah. You send notices out basically to the judges. And then I have a group of people who come to meetings and we send it out. But it's an open affair.
And is it pretty well attended?
No. Mine was one of the bigger ones. We've had as high as 40, 45. A normal attendance of a group like ours might be 15, 18.
Okay. And also with the Alliance of Latinos and Jews, is that something which you're still currently...
I just got involved really about 5, 6. There's a wonderful woman, Patricia Mendoza, who ran for judge as an associate, and I got to meet her. She's very charming. And she's very active. She's co-chair. And she claims that I suggested some things. I think she's just been nice to me. And they had my group of Jews come from Eastern Europe. They're called Ashkenazi. And the groups of Sephardim, or Southern Jews, came from Spain. So they had a Greek man from a town called Saloniki, which is part of Turkey. And they had a Passover with different customs. It was very neat. And we went to a Jewish restaurant because they wanted to know what kosher was. But it was Israeli, so the foods were what you'd eat in Arab countries or Israeli countries. But it was very nice and it was very enjoyable. And I liked it. I don't do a lot of things because I don't feel the stamina for it. I go to, I mentioned, to a writing club once a month. I've gone to that for 4 or 5 years. And that's been fun. I usually go home and rest. I get home because I get down in 6:40. And I usually leave here about 3:30. Today I've got to go for my bar interview, which you might be interested in. And so I usually get home and watch the news and read. I love to read most of the things. And you know, you can't when you go to school, but when you get out of school, there's a lot of stuff you can read that's really quite fascinating. And I'm going to say, there's a process by the Bar Association. The most important one to me, the best one, Chicago Bar. In recent years, Illinois State Bar became more active. And then there are partisan bars, anything you want to go for, black bar, gay bar, Jewish bar, separatist. And they're together in a group called the Alliance. So three groups of people interview you. And you fill a horrible form out, horrible because it's about, yeah, 2 or 3 inches thick. And you tell about all the things you've done. And then you go over to an interview, like I'm going today at 5:30. And lawyers will ask you, I say to them, I'm always simplistic. I say, if you want to know about a judge, ask the lawyers who appear before him. Because that's the best measure. Well, there's a lot of interviewing and stuff. And I don't expect I'll have a problem. I've been before them. I was also an interviewer, an investigator, they call it. I was on the board that interviewed, and I was there 2, 4, 5 times. So I've never had problems, but you're always leery, which you should be. You should come to something and be concerned about how you do.
How often does one have to go through this?
Only when
process?
You're running.
Oh, okay.
When you're up for retention, the retention is the associate by the judge, or you're up for the reappointment, which is where you're running on your name, yes or no, and when you're running like a recall. There's two of them said to me, which I thought was rather funny, but I can see it on the people. They say you want to see, make sure you're not losing it. And I thought it was very funny. You know, sometimes when you get older, you can lose it. But I don't think I am yet. But there is a time, and I've seen for judges, where it gets to be a time to go. I don't have the stamina. I think I wouldn't have the stamina for practicing law because most lawyers work 60 hours a week. But I don't have a problem. Okay.
And do you see yourself retiring at any time, feeling that it's your time to go?
I thought about it because there were some questions whether or not there was finances to recall the judges, which is really rather silly because our pension is 85%, so we really don't cost them anything. If you take the fact that we're tax exempt for state income tax, which is 3%, we pay 11% of our income in. So when you're not in or you're retired, you're in about the same place. It's a wonderful pension. But I didn't know what I would do. I was going to do mediation or arbitration. I just wouldn't go comfortable going back to practicing law. A friend of mine, she was appointed, and then she ran for a while. She had this famous story. She said, I go into court, I write out an order, and then I cite it. Okay, because, you know, you get into a habit. It would be hard to put myself in the position of being a lawyer. You can, if you will. It's much better for younger people. At the age of 76, I don't want to start being a lawyer yet.
And about how long are the interviews for the Alliance?
The interviews for most places don't exceed an hour. In fact, because they know me moderately well, the last one wasn't even a half hour. If there's a lot of questions that are raised, they may take longer time. Basically, you list the cases you have and the lawyers that have been before you. And everybody has one or two lawyers. Nobody's liked by everybody. That's the real world. Somebody may have lost the case, but if the lawyers speak highly of you, you shouldn't have any problem. I hope I don't. I don't need problems.
Okay. And the other organization you mentioned to me was the Chicago Jewish Historical Society.
I have been a member for a number of years, and I just felt I hated the evening meetings. I don't have the stamina for it. So I'm still a member, but I was on the board for years. It's very good. Walter Roth is a number of very fine people, and they really do real history. Yeah, in Chicago, there's a lot of history of everybody in this town.
Okay, and were you involved in any sort of projects like the oral history project there?
Not really. I was busy and I wanted to write my book, which is fiction and it's not in the same category. I just find that after a while, and you're in the academic world, academic people can become picayunish. If I write a novel, I'm king. I don't have to worry about anybody.
Okay. Was there anything other, any other remarkable things that you did with the Historical Society?
The remarkable things I did was when we were in volunteer politics. We ended up together, but my chaplain much more than me, creating the Elrod Decision, Chaplain Decision, which protected people in government from being forced to work in politics. We ended up with Project Leap, and I got the thing, ending vote fraud in Chicago. And I take pride in the fact that even though the system may not be better, it's a more open system. I'm not sure when people vote, they always use lots of brains. They do all kinds of interesting things. But it's their choice.
Yes.
Those were the things I did that I felt were things I was proud of.
And what sorts of interesting things do you mean when you say people that vote do some interesting things?
There's a whole difference between reality and perception. Everybody can come out and watch somebody who's a total idiot, but he pitches well. And, for example, I didn't say it. I loved the governor until he became governor. 12 years ago, I ran for office, judge, he ran for Congress. He was wonderful. He's the best and most, he's the greatest hustling campaigner I've ever met. Then he gets to be governor. And he says dumb things. He accused the judges of being greedy. He insulted the Mike Madigan. And you don't do those things. So I'm saying people do different things in different places. I think in the long run, people use good sense. But with the situation in Iraq, I don't know anybody could have re-elected Bush. And they did. So I'm saying people get taken by things. It's a free country. You know, they've got a right to have their opinions and I to mine. But you don't feel that everybody acts logically. And it goes in a way. Senator Durbin, when he first started, I didn't have a great opinion. The more I've seen him, the more respect I have. Obama, what a fabulous man. What personality. I hope they let him alone because they shouldn't push him. They should let him become senator. So I'm saying you can get hustled by somebody and you can get to feel after a while what an idiot. Because you have to... The world doesn't allow you to know everybody you deal with, so you have to deal with perception.
And my partner Kelly and I had a difference of data. When I spoke with you and you told me you got slated for judge, you told me it was with the Republican Party, right?
When I wanted to run for appointed judge, I've got to separate two things. Okay. When I ran for associate judge, I went to the Republicans and asked for their support. I got it. When I ran for elected judge, I could have $1 million and run as a Republican. It'd be a joke because I was in a district going from Chinatown to Peterson along the lakefront. And except for, say, somebody who's outstanding like a Bernie Carey or an Ogilvy, it's an independent district, but when you're down on the bottom of the ticket, nobody pays attention to you. So I did run there as a Democrat, and I did go to be interviewed. I was not the regular, I was not the slated candidate, but I will tell you, everybody was nice to me. George Dunn allowed me to speak before his group. Allowing you to speak really means it's up to the individual candidate. Lee Preston, without my asking, endorsed me. So I was very complimented. One person who I won't rename promised me and then went back on his word. And one thing I never believe you should do, you give your word, you stick with it. But people were very nice to me. I carried almost every single precinct that was either gentrified, meaning the younger people, or along the lake, the high rises. And the pattern of voting for the Jews and the young independent people is almost exactly the same, as opposed to, say, Jewish communities like Skokie, which could be more conservative. Jewish communities are liberal, fairly independent communities.
Is that what you mean when you say they vote alike? Is that they're liberal and they're voting?
Well, it's a moderate to liberal. I think if you go off the wall, they may not go there. But I think most people are centrists. The Democrats are center to the moderately to the left of center. There are more and more older people who are going further Republican. But even people I know who are moderate Republicans don't agree with where Bush is because he's too far over. They don't really want... Well, you have the same thing in the churches. The black church may not like gay marriage, but they ain't about to go to the far right wing. Okay? And I think that's why the Democrats lost. They lost people. They slice off on their right by gay marriage and some other things. I don't understand stem cell because I think that's utter stupidity. You don't have to have abortions or terrible things in order to get stem cells. Every time a woman has a natural abortion, miscarriage is a natural abortion, and the eggs that are saved are all adequate. So I don't know what the churches are so worried about. And when I see these people like Christopher Reeves and others who have these terrible diseases, and God help them, if there's any chance to help them, we ought to. I mean, if you stood the rest of your life shaking, I mean, how can you not help these people? And then I don't care. I mean, people have a right to take the position they are, I think. And I like many Republicans who are moderately centrist, like Lugar, like, what's his name, the guy from Pennsylvania, who's on the judicial thing. There's a number of good Republicans who are moderates. I don't like people who are over on either extreme.
Okay. And I read that you were recently involved in a program where young ladies were brought here to kind of get a feel for the circuit court system, Women First. Do you remember your involvement with that?
I don't separate it out, but every 3 months or so there's a group of people that come. I get it more in the other courtroom than here. They want to see the trials. And there are lots of people who come in, and lots of people come in and ask. And for example, I have something I did yesterday. Whenever there's parents with a child, I always call them up because children shouldn't be afraid of the courts. And I say, is this your mommy and daddy? Say yes, they're fighting boys. And then I say, you know, I'm the judge. How do you want anything? My two grandnephew, niece and nephew said, get candy. So I said, okay, now you get them candy. And if they don't get you candy, you come back to me. And I like to josh them a little because they should feel it's a comfortable place. And I think the people who come and visit, I don't remember the particular one, but it happens quite frequently. And it's good because people should come to know their system. They shouldn't be afraid of it.
So when they visit, do they visit in your courtroom while you're doing a...
Most always there. There's nothing exciting when I'm wearing the robe out there. It's much more formal.
Okay. And we didn't talk a lot about your wife, children, and grandchildren.
I'm married 54 years. I married a woman I met at the University of Chicago. We went together for 2 or 3 years before we married. And we get along. We're both fairly independent-minded. The only real disagreement we ever had, and she didn't want me to run for judge, because she really is nervous about people running in public life, okay? And I knew that I wouldn't move from an associate unless I ran. But normally, we talk things over, we try to respect each other's position. And she feels she's almost 80, about 78, and she used to make all the affairs, Thanksgiving and Hanukkah and everything. Well, this year she turned it over to the kids. And my son had Hanukkah, and she said, it was the best one we ever had. It was wonderful. And it's good to pass the, I felt bad. There's an old cartoon about the man, the woman who's worked her fanny off, and she's sweating. And she's like, what an event. And the husband drinking half a can of beer. Well, what was so hard about it? So being the paterfamilias, I sat back and watched it. But it is nice because we went down for Thanksgiving to my daughter in Indianapolis. And it's nice for tradition to start moving down. We have two homes. We have a home nearby, 860 Lakeshore Drive. We have a home in Mundelein. Well, all people are fighting. There's no institution. We are married. There's no institution like marriage. Well, we had a big, nice house in Evanston with a little mortgage. And the kids were all gone, and she was had this empty nest feeling. So we sold it, and we moved down. And then she was gardening a little by either my daughter or my son. So finally, we got our little house where she goes out on weekends with her cat and gardens, and I usually go out. She may spend more time than me. And three kids. My son has done magnificently in real estate. He's an MBA from Northwestern, and he's done very well. And I've got two girls, both of whom we're going to teach. The youngest one was a kindergarten teacher, and the older one was a, what do they call it, disturbed children. Well, the older one, you burn out in that. When you're dealing with disturbed or backward children, that was everybody after 4, 5, 6 years. So she became a clown, and she taught the younger one to be a clown, too. And they go to birthday parties, basically. And now she's, over the last several years, she's been involved in as a personal trainer, which she likes. And my grandchildren range from 20 down to, and she's almost 21, they keep getting older, down to about a year and a half or seven, four girls and three boys. And they're fun, they're growing bigger, and they're nice. That's your tie to immortality are your children and your grandchildren. In fact, I'll show you that. I have all these coin sayings, but they're mine. So if they're mine, I can say them. And I made a dedication, and I said to my wife, my three children, and my seven grandchildren, you are my ties to immortality. So it's nice to feel your life moves on, okay? Because none of us are going to be here forever.
And I heard you say that your wife really didn't want you to run for a judge. Now, how hard was it for her to finally come to terms with your decision?
She accepted it. You know, one of the things that neither of us do, if something's happened, we don't bitch about it. We come back to the real world. And it was interesting because I raised a considerable sum of money, which you have to raise. If you're running, you got to get it out there. I show you my biblical image on the bench. And this is my basic piece, which I distributed over 100,000. People were laughing because I was standing in front of L platform 7 o'clock every morning. And my friend Jerry Orbach said to me, it's going to blow their mind, you being a judge and standing out there. If you notice, I have some very interesting names that are fairly unusual. John Anderson. So,
okay.
I said to everybody, they're going to tell you about what they want to do. I'm going to tell you about what I did. And it was great because, you know, if you have a life, now if you're very young, obviously you haven't done it. But I did a lot of things. And these were, I was endorsed and treated very well by the bar associations and a lot of wonderful individuals. And I had the ideal, and this happens by accident, if you work hard, wonderful things. I put a bench on the bench was an accident. I ended up with co-chairman, honorary co-chairman, Seymour Simon and Marianne Smith. It's a white Jewish male and a Catholic female. Marianne Smith was the alderman. And then G.A. Finch, who's a black man, was my chair. Now, I couldn't have done that deliberately if I tried. It just worked itself. G.A. Finch is a wonderful man. And he said to me, if you ever run, I'll help you. So I took advantage of it.
And what is his position? I don't know.
Julie Finch is a lawyer. He's one of the head lawyers in the Courier and Herald. And he's a really outstanding human being. He took about 3 years and worked as a lawyer for Chicago Public Health. He's a very dedicated man. And Seymour Simon, you know, don't you, sir? Seymour Simon came off the state Supreme Court. He was head of the county board. He was an alderman. He had a lot of jobs. Very, very wonderful man.
Are the Gardners here related, in relation?
Which ones?
Honorable Joseph Gardner. And
Joseph
Michael
Gardner is a black man, unless I haven't looked recently. Joe Gardner happens to have. That's all right. Gardners are all kinds of people, but Michael is probably on there. Michael is my son, but Joe Gardner is a wonderful man. He's been in politics, and he's a good friend of mine. And I can have some black relatives that may not have found out yet. Okay?
That's true. Because you are studying the 1830s to the 1850s now. That's,
yes.
That's what I've read and what you've told me as well.
The ironic part about it is the Southern perception was strange because they talked about the abolitionists who were well hated in the North as well as the South. In fact, I just went to Civil War Roundtable where the guy talked about Lincoln Douglas debates. And Lincoln was very careful to be anti-slavery but not pro-Negro. Because nobody at the time, not nobody, there probably weren't more than 10 to 20%. Starting only with the Emancipation Proclamation did the attitude toward blacks change. But they start talking about the abolitionists want integration. Well, the greatest integration happened in the South between the household help and the master. Okay. So, but it's a very interesting thing because I've been trying to figure out why it is that Southern whites at the time of the Confederacy created a philosophy of God being on their side. They went to the point of having separate acts of creations for blacks, whites, and Orientals. And they're very interesting because I'm interested doubly in the period because only under Hitler did you have anti-Semitism or racism raised to a philosophical and religiosity. So I'm trying to see how it comes about because the founding fathers like Jefferson and Washington, they may have been racially bad in the sense they were slaveholders, but they were almost apologetic. They're all going to free their slaves, but they never ended anything but in debt, so they never did.
On that note, have you considered, we did discuss it, writing something that is not fiction?
You know what bothers me? In the world today, sometimes there's greater truth in fiction than there is in nonfiction. I've been part of the academic world. One of the reasons that I didn't go into teaching, I was in economics at the University of Chicago, is that in order to be somebody today, you've got to jump or criticize somebody else. And they're all so busy nitpicking. Somebody said to me, why is there so much infighting among the academics? And then they responded because there's so little to fight about. I could write about, for example, politics in Chicago or things about Jewish life, but I really don't have that kind of desire because I like to learn more and more. And when you're writing, you learn less and less and you write with more and more depth. In my book, everything except something I use for a device, I created a manuscript, but everything else is historically sound. And it's very funny because all of my friends stopped me and they read the book and said, it's just like my life, that's like what my grandfather did. And not only Jews, my friend Pat Mendoza said, well, that's her family, how our families come up out of nowhere and move up. It's the American dream. So I don't know, I'm not saying never, but I'm working on a couple of things that are all fiction. And if I ever left being a lawyer, I might write about the law. If I ever left being a judge. It's so hard to feel if you're writing about it, people are going to accuse you about writing about their case. And you can. There's some interesting cases out there.
Well, without giving anything away, what other sorts of histories are you working on for your fiction?
Well, there's a place called Powell, which is the largest bookstore, I believe, in America. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah.
I got them on the American Online, and I asked for books between 1800 and 1865, ended up with 137 pages of books, with 5-6, and out of there I picked out about 70 books, and I started to read them. Interesting books. I bought one because it's too long to read, called The History of the American Whig Party. So there's all kinds of things, and all the things you think you know, you really don't know. When you get in close to something, you find there are many more qualifications. Your general knowledge is not bad, and you have to be careful, because as you get too far into history, some of the actual facts as written may not really be representative or true. I mean, people go and seek out whatever they want to. History, for example, Lee has become the great hero. He's no more the great hero because the world has changed. Every war, Hermann Wolfe wrote 2 books about the Second World War. And he has a mythical German general commenting, and he says the war history is written by the victors, not in the Civil War, because in about 1876, when Reconstruction ended, the South rewrote the war. So a lot of the stories on the Civil War are filled with ludicrous bias, in my opinion, because the South never had a chance to win. If you remember Gone with the Wind, Clark Gable says, how are you going to fight? You haven't got a factory, you haven't got the population. And it was true. So because of Lee's defensive genius, they held off losing. But they had almost no chance of winning unless they could force the North. They couldn't conquer the North. Their thought was maybe they could force the North to let them go. So I'm saying, I like history, but you got to read history, and you can't when you're in school because you've got professors that give you everything as being from God. But when you read history, you've got to read it with a little grain of salt. And the same thing with all your professors. They come from a point of view, don't they?
Yes.
And you have a better chance for an A if you ape what they say, don't you?
Okay. And back to your time here at the Circuit Court of Cook County. So far, has it been a good or a bad experience to you?
It varies from things from place to place. I spent 8 years in domestic relations. At the end, I couldn't wait to get down. It wears you out. I did a lot of good because I helped people. I believe that trying cases is effective. And when you leave your problems up to a jury, you're leaving much more to chance. When you settle, you may not get what you want, but it's your decision. So I enjoyed tremendously my time in the commercial calendar. I like this. I'll be very honest with you. There's not enough work here. I like work, okay? And I would like twice the load I have. But that's me. I've always been an infomaniac for work.
And along the
same. I did some months in traffic, which I think is very important for a beginning judge, because you learn how to be a judge instead of an advocate or lawyer. I did some time in housing, which I enjoyed. So you know what? You get an assignment, you take it, you do it. You can't sit and gripe about it.
Along the same line, have you been accomplishing what you wanted to do as a judge?
I think the most important thing you try to do as a judge is try to get people to respect you and your fairness, to bring the value of the judiciary up. 30-40 years ago, the judiciary was considered to be much more political. It isn't now. So if people are out there that are respected and people feel that you're being fair, that's the most important thing you do. If you look at the stuff, you try to be as fair as you can. And you're not perfect. I've been reversed. You try to understand the case and do the best you can. And you try to give the people the sense that they're being treated fairly.
And the first time you're reversed, how does that really make you feel?
You know, it's a whole world up there. Most of the time when a case comes down and I read it months or year or so later, I don't even recognize the case. Some cases, recently I had one where I was wrong and I learned where I was wrong. So it doesn't bother me because they're not picking at me. Indeed, they're very nice to me. The one thing about the appellate court of all over is that if you're respected as a judge, they treat you with respect too. If you're an idiot, you get reversed continually. So I get some reversals, but almost everybody does. There are a few judges like Warren Wolfson who are sitting up who are magnificent. But everybody sees cases and goes along. Doesn't bother me. You can't let yourself be bothered by it. I got a funny story for you. I did a lot of election cases, and Joe Schneider, who was the judge, was very nice to me. I only did this once in my life. So I reversed him. He says, "Sheldon, I don't mind if you reverse me." Well, in this 1 month, I reversed him twice. The only time in my life. So he says, "Sheldon, I think the judges are overactive on the appellate court." So I say, if they made a habit out of reversing me on everything, I might not like it. It's part of the game. The strange part is that so many times on appeal it's handled by different lawyers. And some of the same lawyers, if they made the arguments here, might have very well have won.
Okay. And what do you think is the future of the Cook County court system?
Well, I happen to love Tim Evans. Okay. He's a superb chief judge. Tim was my boss both in law and the domestic. His predecessor, O'Connell, was superb. O'Connell was one of the best administrators I've ever seen. Comerford made a transition where he was a little bit political, but he was also good. Unless the system changes, we don't have a heavily political system. The head of the Democratic Party and the mayor of the city of Chicago doesn't. I hear of no situation where there's an attempt to influence anybody. And as long as the system is independent, it'll be a good system. I wish that we didn't have elected judges, because when judges are up for retention, and there's usually two, three, four that everybody agrees are dreadful, they never lose. So it would be nice if they could pick judges by knowing instead of by name. A couple of people who were well known won out over better opponents, in my opinion. I don't want to mention any names because it would be appropriate. But it's a good system. You know, what do you think of democracy? It's as good as the people. And if we don't care, we don't vote, as long as we keep an interest, I will say this, I think the newspapers do a fine job. They cover us, and I think they do an excellent job. And I think we'd be better off an appointed system, and I've always, even though I was elected, I think an appointed system would be better. It's too hard for the rank and file of the people to know who these people are. So first, they vote for all the women. My wife does, a lot of women do. They don't know. Oh, people aren't biased, but along the margin, if they don't know, they'll vote for the ethnic base or they'll vote because they don't know any better. And that's what's wrong with the system. Like, my wife would not vote for a woman in a race where she knew the woman to be not competent. But they're all a bunch of names. People pick it out.
So is there a way of maybe informing voters on who some of these candidates are?
Newspapers try. We were with Independent Voters in Illinois when I was. We put out a lot of ballots. We put out over a million ballots, which were circulated around the newspapers. A guy I know said to me, when we clean out after the precinct, we find IBI sample ballots and Tribune is very well regarded. Sometimes it's not nearly as well regarded. Maybe it will be. It was at one time. But with all the change in his vision, not that the people aren't as good, I don't think their perception is as good. And at the top, for example, president, governor, senator, people make their own minds. You really need endorsements on lower ones. Sometimes they have a bias too, but there's a bias among the bar. There's a bias among the bar to prefer people with jury experience because so many of them do personal injury or criminal cases. I don't agree with the bias because I don't think jury's experience is that important. So if you're competent, which happened to three or four friends of mine, but you haven't had jury experience, you might not be found qualified. So what I have told people to do is to go out and get some jury experience. You don't need a lot of it, but that's the bias in the system. You know, judges, like anybody else, are human beings. They have their failings, etc. But the system is good. I remember an old man who I officed with. He said the bench is afraid of the bar and the bar is afraid of the bench. Well, it's an old statement. We respect the lawyers in front of us. The worst thing that you can do as a judge is to be so hostile that if you're recalled or people take changes from you. You have to respect judges, and you do get a few that really misuse it. I think it works both ways. You don't have to, you don't let lawyers push you around, but you respect them. I think that's important. One of the things I was most proud of is I was quoted, and I think it was on that brochure, of being complimented for being courteous to judges and clients. And that to me is very important. It doesn't cost you anything.
And I'm sure that some feel that if you are courteous, that someone, a lawyer may try to take advantage
they
of
do.
You.
They do. I've had a case where it came back to me from somebody I know in divorce court, very nice young man, told the people that he was a friend of mine in the sense of influencing them. And that's a risk you have to take. I think people who know me know that it's baloney. And that's one reason why judges frequently become so standoffish. But I'll take the risk. Everything in life has a risk.